Welcome to Responder Resilience. I'm your host, David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with two veteran 911 dispatchers, Catherine DeValeskis and Craig Tinney, about dispatcher mental health, off-duty time spent, best practices for decompression, and what it's like to have to sift through a barrage of emotionally charged 911 calls and get to the pertinent details in a compassionate way, right after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers. With vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Lumley, LCSW EMTB. We've been looking forward to this episode for a while because dispatchers can sometimes be thought of as the red-headed stepchildren of emergency services. However, they are an integral part of everything we do, and we're going to do a deep dive into what it's like to be a dispatcher on a lot of different levels. So I'd like to introduce our two guests. Craig Tinney was an Army infantry veteran and is a 12-year 911 emergency dispatcher. Craig was featured along with other first responders in an interview about dispatcher stress and burnout from OC-87 as part of the Beneath the Vest series. Catherine DeValeskis is a 31-year veteran senior operator at the Watertown, Connecticut Police Department, where she dispatches police and fire. Catherine also dispatches part-time at the Naugatuck, Connecticut Police Department and has worked at numerous other PDs in the area over the last 30 years. She's an active volunteer with Donate Life CT and New England Donor Services, raising awareness about organ and tissue donation. Catherine, Craig, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Just to get started here, if you would both share a little bit about the agency you work for and the area you cover, just give us some pertinent details. We'll start with you, Catherine.
Good morning. So I work at Watertown Police Department full time. I started part time here in 1991, and I was part time for 26 years. Way back in the day, we had the great luxury of having a grandfathered system of having medical benefits provided and appropriate hours where you could basically raise your family on that. The job has shifted from then. I think it's probably because mostly agencies and towns and organizations have realized, you know, cost effectiveness leans towards a full-time staff member department or a regionalization situation. So I eventually went full-time, and then I've always, like I said before, maintained a part-time employment with other agencies, partially because I really liked the job. And I liked learning different agencies, how they did things, and I thought it brought a lot to my primary position here at Watertown.
Beautiful. Craig, how about you?
I'm in Montgomery County, which is a county right outside of Philadelphia, borders it. We're a larger agency, and we have multiple townships and boroughs. I started in 2009, mainly taking calls. And since then, I've been answering lines and training new people on how to answer the phones and deal with the public. We go from anywhere from small farm towns with rural areas to city-like atmospheres, smaller areas, much like Philadelphia.
We talked about this in the intro. Dispatchers sometimes thought of as, you know, the not quite first responders, but, you know, you're always part of the call. Do you ever feel like the red-headed stepchildren of emergency services, Catherine?
Especially when I was younger, as a woman. Young girl, actually, more so. It was really my first adult job. So I didn't really know much about the world. I didn't know anything about working in anything other than, you know, local pharmacy. Mm-hmm. So it was a real eye opener, and it was a real eye opener to see back then more so how people treated you in regards to your contribution, which they felt was nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's really progressed over the years. And I think part of that is because of technology. We have a lot more hands-on activity with the investigations, with the calls, with the radios. I think that technology has really brought us to the forefront of being the integral part of the investigation, motor vehicle stop, larceny, shoplifting. All these different things that are coming to light and being brought up are really putting the dispatcher at the forefront of being important to the law enforcement process and firefighting process.
So it sounds like a lot of it's real time, like your information gathering and
absolutely
sharing. Okay. How about you, Craig? What's your view on this?
Yeah, we're really where the rubber meets the road as far as when a call, regardless of how little or large, starts. And it's easy that once the cavalry arrives, like that's your first responder, your officer, firefighter, EMT, we're off the line. We're forgotten about from that point forward. We're the initiators. We get the brunt of it, of what's going on, a blast right there in your face. We're either off the line or still talking a person through while they're arriving. And then it's ultimately the big switch after that, right? They take over on the field and then we're gone and we have no idea what's going on. We follow through with dispatch and we know we follow through progressively what's going on and how the status of our people are. But after that, it's gone. Catherine, I'm not sure, or and David also, if you guys are familiar, there's two bills currently going through Congress as far as making dispatchers first responders and not just clerical staff. And
correct.
I think getting that passed would be a huge boost to profession in itself.
And absolutely. Morale and recognition, mm-hmm. And which kind of goes hand in hand.
Beyond that, mm-hmm. I think it would help in terms of, you know, down the road after you're retired, if there's any kind of issues relating back to your job, it may mm-hmm. impact how insurance is handled or comp claims or anything like that. So it's huge. In the dispatcher seat, when you're doing it, when you're doing the job, what are some of the sensory challenges getting kind of like a barrage of information and also then having to multitask with all the things that you need to do to get that, you know, response going and handle the call? What's that like, Craig?
Overwhelming, but in short bursts, because it's not like one instance or one call takes up your whole entire shift. It's chopped up into little segments where it's just you have something here, switch to something here, switch to something here, switch to something here. And it's you're basically at the will of two people. You're at the will of the workload of the public and you're at the workload of the responders at the field. I'll say field responders. Mm-hmm. If the officers are quiet, for example, then that's half your load. But if they're pulling traffic stops or they have traffic blitzes going on, you know, you have the public giving their calls out of what they need, and then you have the officer's needs on their hand. It's kind of like juggling mm-hmm. and get used to it.
Do you have a strategy for juggling all these different situations, you know, especially if it's happening all at the same time?
You got to mitigate your stress level. You got to mitigate your I've found through the years it's overwhelming when you start, but as everything starts to get as you gain more experience, you just learn how to get yourself through what you're currently going through. But I think that also leads to part of the problem where once you get through it, you say, whew, I'm through it. You don't revisit that. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes things happen so quickly that you don't even realize it. You're physically or mentally not even recognizing or realizing what's going on until it's over. But then if you don't revisit it, your mind doesn't forget about it. And your mind will store it. And I think that's where a lot of compound stress occurs down the line that hurts us.
Catherine, what's your experience?
I agree. I think that as I keep thinking about his agency and it being, you said 28 people on the board at a time.
Yeah, it could be up. Yeah, up to. Yeah.
I work with one other person and I'm very fortunate. And that person, very often when you have a good working relationship with them, they feed off of you and they know how to either console you or build you up or pick up the slack or step in. And I think in a bigger agency, and again, I haven't worked in one, you really are that sole independent dispatcher for that call. Whereas I'm in a room with somebody that's 5 feet away from me. If I'm struggling with something or I can't hear something, they can jump in. It's not such a broad production, I think. I don't know. Again, not my wheelhouse, but and this is all I know. And all the agencies I've ever worked in, it's always been one or two people, often one. So when you're the one person in the room taking all the calls and doing all the thinking and all the working at it, it builds a different skill set. But I think in the same breath, the kind of when you're in a big agency, you're the one person as well. I don't know what your setup is, but it seems to me like it's almost 28 little individuals.
Yeah, it's like pods separated and much like you and your partner would be set up, just multiplied there, like all over the large room. So I absolutely get what you're saying as far as that goes. And your reference to him as your pod partner. Your pod partner that shift is your make or break, you know, experience.
Person. Okay, yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be very intimidating for somebody like me, even with three times as much experience, to be in a room with that many people. We build a different vibe, I think.
It would be a different vibe, but it's also I can also see the stressor of being in a smaller organization where it's just the two of you. If you guys have traffic blitzes going on one time and then maybe a major event, say like a robbery or a high-end call, on top of, say, a storm or something like that, it's very easy to imagine how you'd be like overwhelmed. And, yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes. Absolutely. Sometimes. I mean, it's relative. So we have two dispatchers on and we have three officers on the road and a supervisor minimum. So everything's relative. So everybody's there's a balance. We have had major calls. We had a major call 2 years ago that happened right at shift change, and I had seven guys on the road, two supervisors, and I was by chance training someone, and we had three dispatchers in the room. So that was probably in my entire career the most people I'd ever worked with, which was awkward, and it was an awful call. So taking that stuff home with you, like you were saying, mitigating the stress of the moment as opposed to the stress when you go home. That was really hard for me because as the trainer, I wasn't really in the call. I wasn't on the radio. I wasn't taking the phone call and I was watching it and it was a totally different experience. And every day is new with this job, whether you want to activate that or not. If you want to go in, you want to be a grump and you want to have a bad day and you don't want to have a productive, you know, work experience, sure, come in, sit in the seat, you know, answer the phone, do the minimal tasks we need you to do. But if you really take a hard look at, you are part of somebody's life in the moment, and that's what this job is, and being helpful and being productive and making sure everybody goes home safely, that's key in keeping your sanity at a reasonable level.
When you're answering these calls, you're basically getting, you know, a lot of audio information, just sound, right? The voice, this whatever the environmental sounds are. without much of a visual picture, unless you happen to have a map or you're seeing some kind of some kind of text information. So how do you process that, kind of sift through what could be a very emotional call, emotional caller giving you a ton of information? Some of it's relevant, maybe some of it's not. How do you get to those pertinent details and kind of maintain a compassionate attitude towards handling the call? Craig?
So it's all about visualization for me in my mind. I have to paint some type of picture that's going on. I have to visualize what's happening. If it's talking to a field, we'll start with a caller, we'll say. I try to paint a picture in my mind, almost like out of the matrix, like a virtual reality set, like all around me. I put myself in the caller's shoes and try to see what they're seeing and hear what they're hearing and what they're witnessing. And that kind of gives me an edge onto where to lead them and what questions to ask it or mine from them. Responder the same way. If they're yelling or something's going sideways on their call, try to envision what they're experiencing or, you know, what they could be heading into and kind of mitigate from that way. Maps help, especially if you're familiar with your area. You can put yourself in those places so the visualization becomes a little easier. And other than that, a lot of things I really don't want to see. I don't want to see that bad car wreck with, people flung from the car. I don't want to see the fire with people entrapped. I don't want to see that. If I did, I'd be an officer or a firefighter. So I'm thankful on that end, and I try to mitigate that exposure as little as possible. So in a grounded area where you try to just be empathetic for the caller or the responder that's on the other line with you and try to put yourself in that position to what they're doing, whether it's a loud, ruckus party next door or whether it's, a family disagreeing and fighting, just or up to the terrible thing where it has to do with weapons or injuries, and just try to mitigate as best as possible.
Catherine, how do you kind of maintain a compassionate attitude when you're being barraged with a very emotional call, lots of information, and maybe only part of it's pertinent?
So it is important to dissect the call, dig out what's important, dig out what your responders want to know, have that. And again, small department, compared to what Craig has. I know which officer wants which information 90% of the time. I know who's going to ask me extra questions and who's going to ask me no questions. I look for my CAD notes, whatever it is. And having that small town feeling, which I never really thought was so small until now, until really speaking to somebody that has that experience. That's what I'm a checklist person. I'm a numbers person. I will determine who's going to be getting that call. And then in that figure out what they need to know, do my mental checklist of weapons, location, front, back, center, how many people are in the house, all those things that we teach people. But in the same breath, I know that kind of just keeps me on a roll of talking to that person, keeps that conversation open, make sure that they know that I'm still there. Mm-hmm. Nothing frightens me more when a call taker is not keeping the caller knowing that they're talking to them. Just dead air. There's dead air on the radio, and then there's dead air on the phone, and I'd rather see dead air on the radio when there's nothing to say. I mean, obviously, if you have something to say, but that person on the other phone really needs to know that you're still there. Even if it's 5 seconds of, did you put the dog away? Did you, where's the front of the house? Because if you think about construction these days and even older construction, front doors aren't always at the front door, in the front of the house. Ask them silly questions just so they know you're there. That's why they called you. They want to know you're there. They want to know you're there to help. They want to feel confident that you are educated enough in this field to give the information that's going to get the officer there fast as possible. And it kind of creates some type of a rapport when you're talking to somebody that almost settles your own self. Mm-hmm. So you're not feeling so heightened. Well, you've got the officer in your ear and you've got the radio on the mic that you're talking, and then you're still taking the call and you're still entering your CAD notes, all these different tasks that we do. If you're just having a conversation with somebody, it's soothing to both of you. It's not
So
that hard either.
sounds like you're just being present with them on the phone.
Absolutely. Very important, I think. And I've been honest, I'm not the best person in the world to call 911. I'm a little bit of a frazzle brain. So I know what I would like. You know, I would like just somebody not leave me hanging while I'm screaming for the littlest things.
Well, I think of what you spoke with, you said that how there's a difference. It's really not, though, because you can only answer realistically one call at a time. So it doesn't mean if there's 500 people in the room versus one person in the room. When that call comes in and you're engaged with that person, what I tell the people that I train and when I keep my mindset is that you're it. Whatever it is on that
Yes.
line, you have it and that is yours. So we might as well make the best of it when it comes to us. So when that caller calls you, you guys are immediate best friends. Regardless of whether they're hostile or they're panicked or they're in pain, it doesn't matter. That person is your best friend for the duration of that call. So if you strike up that rapport immediately, I can't transfer it to you. Just called 911 for an emergency. Who are we going to transfer you to? The National Guard? It doesn't work that way. It's in your lap. It's your call. So now that we're making the best of it, let's do a little role reversal. If you were the one, or your mother, or your wife, or your husband was the one that's flipped over in a car, and they call 911, do they want you? Or do they want someone that's like, no, you don't want that when you're flipped over in a vehicle in the middle of the night in the woods. You want someone that says, I got you. I know where you are. The help's on the way. I'm going to be here with you until they get to you to do that.
Absolutely.
Because that's what I want when I call 911 or if my wife calls 911. That's what I want on the other end.
That's what I need. Like I said, I don't call well. I'm not. It's so fr and it was I had a recent incident and somebody actually said to me, "Boy, I bet you have a better perspective on things." And I'm like, "No, that's me all the time when I call. I'm a different person outside of the job." And I'm very empathetic. And there's been many a time where I've cried on the phone with people. I had a suicidal, I had a suicide where a gentleman called about his child, probably within a year. And there was nothing to say. I cried. Like one of my officers, but their grandparent died. And I've known this guy since for 20 years. I've known he goes to his nanny's house for lunch every day. And when the parents called and they said that she'd passed, I cried. I had nothing to do. It's just, it's who I am. Doesn't mean the job doesn't get done, but I would rather have somebody cry on the phone with me if I was the caller than somebody go, okay, they're on the way. Click. You know,
So,
that's very unhelpful and very hurtful. It's hurtful.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT. Well, there's a lot you guys just covered, and I'd love to just circle back on a little bit of it. One of them is just a comment that having been a fire officer, responding to calls with numerous dispatchers, working with different dispatchers over the years, for me to do my job the best I could, the ones that gave me the pertinent information en route, and it could be little details, but they were such a difference maker, like, the lock boxes and such, part of the house, and sometimes the dispatchers were very familiar with the area, so they're able to give you, kind of landmarks and notes that help you to save time and, show up ready to go rather than having to do a whole exploration of, where am I, what's the layout of the the building or, you know, who am I looking for? So my hat's off to dispatchers like yourselves who are professional and have attention to detail. It makes a huge difference to the responders in the field to have that kind of support. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
So let's talk a little bit about these kind of calls, these heavy duty calls, and maybe you have a chance to take a breath in between. Maybe the phone rings as soon as you hang up with that call, but what do you do to restabilize and kind of regroup after an emotional call like that, Craig?
So we have 12-hour shifts, right? So say my first call of the day is a CPR on typically a non-CPR person, a younger person or a child or maybe someone that was tragically like struck by a car or something. You're in that jolted moment, your first call of a 12-hour shift. And after you get off the phone with that call, the day doesn't end. It's just on to the next. My phone will ring up to 300 times after that. And what do you do? Does that stay? I oftentimes will forget about that first call by the time the 12th hour comes. But like I said at the start, my mind didn't forget about it. It still stores it back there. Mm-hmm. So physically and consciously, I may be saying, you know, oh, it was a busy shift. It was, you know, I had a lot of calls. Go home, see the kids and the wife. But that's just stacked back there. Next shift, the same kind of thing happens maybe in the middle of the shift. Again, not consciously thinking about it, but the mind does and it keeps it stacked back there and it just stacks back there. And that's ultimately the downfall. That's what burned me out. It wasn't a call that just broke me down that I couldn't handle. It was, listen, when people call 911, they're not calling to say hi and give you positive vibes. It's help now, 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 now. So you have to kind of control a stranger's chaos or help them navigate through it and then get more strangers to these people. Mm-hmm. And it just happens so rapidly that it's not, I just can't. Oh, that was a tough call. Let me just log off and go decompress on that. There's not enough time to do that. So we have to understand and we have to realize that we need to take care of ourselves and we need to take care of the people that are sitting next to us and that share this space, because there's really no one else out there that's going to advocate to do that for us. Mm-hmm. And if we're not doing that for ourselves, we can oftentimes feel abandoned, which circles back to your first point of being the redheaded stepchild of the industry. And that's where a lot of the abandonment issues come from. Not that we're forgotten about or we're treated as office staff instead of first responders, but just the fact that it happens at such a fast pace, we're not taking care of ourselves in the back end. And it leads to burnout, sometimes even worse, depending on the apartment, or department, excuse me, suicides, resignations, high turnovers, and not being able to hire people not coming in to take the job.
Well, Catherine, what's your view on this? You know, how do you kind of regroup, reground yourself in between those calls? And then even, you know, after a shift, like the hot buzzword in responder circles now is EMDR. A lot of people are finding it very effective to kind of, you know, diffuse some of the trauma that they've accumulated over many, many years and many calls. So what do you do between calls and between shifts?
So I think the difference, and Craig pointed out something about, you know, the next call comes in. Mm-hmm. That's the difference with our position than a field responder, because once they hit the road, they go to that call, they're on that call. Mm-hmm. We don't pull them from those calls to go take another accident when the accident is still in the middle of the road. So they have their one thing. They're there. But as soon as we're done with that phone call, we get three more other things. And you have to just recognize that there's a balance in doing your work respectfully and responsibly and getting, you know, all the tasks done and then taking care of yourself. And whether that's doing an outside curricular activity in looking forward to it. So like maybe I don't necessarily can't go out and go do whatever it is I may do, you know, in the middle of my shift, but I can remind myself that tomorrow morning I have, you know, yoga at Naugatuck PD with my friends, and that's beneficial, that whether I'm good at it or not, I look forward to it. Mm-hmm. So that in itself kind of takes you out of the bad circle. Also reminding yourself that, even if it's another job, even if that this work is really hard, if you take another job on and you decide to do small retail and you want to go work at Target for the Christmas season or something because you want to be around holiday decorations, maybe not necessarily holiday happy people because no shopper's happy at this time of the year, but you want to do something and just look forward to it. So yeah, right now stinks, but tomorrow you get to do this. Remind yourself of that. Because if you don't remind yourself of that, tomorrow morning you won't wake up and do it. Because you'll be like, oh, yesterday sucked. Oh yeah, yesterday probably did stink. But today you have a new opportunity to bring some joy to your life, some balance, some change, and then do something different, regroup, regenerate. In regards to the EMDR, I am practicing that right now for an outside work circumstance. It's fantastic. And I don't think that anybody shouldn't be offered it, even if it was an opportunity to be offered it for a work-related circumstance or a once-a-year seminar. If they came in and they did it and then explained how it worked and gave an opportunity for agencies to encourage their members to do it, I mean, it's pretty fantastic.
Well, it's also what you're talking about, Catherine, is having a life outside of emergency services, where some people get so, enmeshed in that's their everything they eat, live, breathe. But you're talking about creating a balance by having
Well, Craig
another
said it
outlet.
too. Nobody calls us because they're having a good day. That's been the standard tagline forever. But it doesn't mean it has to ruin your day. No, take some part of that call that you did well and bring that home with you. Don't bring the bad call home. Bring home the good part of that call where, like,
I use it as a reference all the time. Like, I may have an argument with my wife or my kids may be acting out. You get that one domestic call where it's all holy hell breaking loose and it sounds like a war zone. Wow, maybe my family's not doing that bad.
right?
You know what I
Exactly.
mean? Yeah. So.
It sounds mean, but it's true because we are in the bad news business,
Yeah.
and we're in the tattletaling business.
Yeah.
Everybody's tattling on their neighbors because the leaves are done or the snow's shoveled here or they've got loud music. And it's like, you know what? I would like to have a nice neighbor who played music I enjoyed, or I'd like to have a neighbor who cared for animals and had nice, animals that so the dog got loose. Okay, big deal. Bigger things.
And the reality
Instead of
is,
everybody living in their little house, like segregated, the neighborhoods aren't what they used to be. Agencies aren't what they used to be. People aren't what they used to be. We need to get back to that. And he said before, it starts with someone.
and yet the reality is that in this profession, we do see people at their worst, and it gives you a perspective on, how sometimes how fortunate we are in our lives, to not have some of that trauma and drama going on. So,
Absolutely.
well, I think you actually have to actively seek that though, David. I don't think that that's something that comes naturally to each individual, whether it be a dispatcher or a field user. I think that has to be a positive boon, at least of our business, that regardless of how bad of a day you have walking in, chances are you're going to hear somebody that tops you tenfold very soon. And that's fine. I had to get a new car recently, and I couldn't understand for the life of me why the past year and a half, everybody in vehicle accidents were so angry and upset, more so than any time in my 12 years. Why are people so upset about, because of the chip shortage, people can't find cars. So I'm like, oh my God, that's why people are so angry. There, you can't get a car nowadays. So if people just ran and just, got their car wrecked or got rear-ended, they are so upset and so mad because they know that their
It's a
car searched
bigger
at
thing than it used to
it's a
be.
huge thing right now today. You don't
There's
think
also a
that.
seatbelt shortage. Like
Yeah,
with your seatbelt, it's
crazy shortages going
damages
on, and you don't realize why are vehicle accidents so crazy today?
Can't get a rental.
Exactly. And, but so this
the
is
trifold
why,
of it is very large. The trickle effect. It's very, very big.
And if you just wake up and go to work, you have no idea why people are so pissed off that they just wrecked their car.
Right.
As opposed to 5 years ago, 9 years ago, where it's just like, oh, hey, you know, got into an accident. Everyone's okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, huge.
Craig, love to talk a little bit about your Army background. And do any of those skills from being in the service translate into your job as a dispatcher?
One main one, and that's take care of the people next to you. 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 You're only as successful as the person next to you. Even Catherine in a smaller department has at least one person sitting next to her, and there's a reason why we don't sit in a room by ourselves and it's just one person handling everything. You need support and you need people around you. That's why I feel so passionate about checking in on people and making sure that people are okay with morale and with mental health, because you can't do this job alone and you need people next to you. You need people that are mentally okay and as upbeat or as high morale as possible, because as you sit through the mundane of the day and you take those calls, like she said, about the noise complaints and the meter complaints, the minor theft reports, and just the typical, you know, that's what you have to sit through. But then when that really big mega call comes in where it's a higher priority, you got to be ready at a moment's notice. You get kind of sucked into a lull, you know. It's like meet the complaint, noise complaint, raging domestic with a whole block involved. You got to mitigate that. Like right now, I don't want someone sitting next to me looking at, you know, Google searching for another job, while this chaos is going on and it's affecting their zone and everyone else's zone. Unfortunately, not everybody in our field feels that way. It becomes we need to have butts in seats, and that's what we need. And come hell or high water, we just need to have our levels. We need to have our staffing. We need to have our butts in seats. So get the butts in the seats, and there's a lot to sacrifice in order to get those numbers statistically, and a lot of it has to come to the individual workers' morale, motivation, and mental health. And it kind of hits me in a wheelhouse. So if anything, the infantry with walking and shooting, not so much, being able to be disciplined to do something for 12 hours and taking care of the people around you are the two biggest things.
Catherine, what are some of your beliefs, thoughts, and beliefs about being positive, staying positive on the job?
So as you had said before, excuse me, I do volunteer with Donate Life Connecticut and New England Donor Services. Very passionate about that. I'm a liver transplant recipient. And with that, I've stayed positive. And in fact, I had a retired officer years ago that used to say all the time, you know, you never, ever earn a bad mood. Now, mind you, that was 20 plus years ago, you know, I have gotten a little seasoned over the years. I do have my days. But for the most part, I think what he was really looking at was I was sick, jaundiced, underweight. There was a time where I was in a wheelchair. You know, there was all these things that had happened to me. And like you said, there's, you look at somebody else's life and you take a call from somebody else and you're like, wow, you know, my stuff's really not that bad. And it's not that we're being mean to people. It's just everybody should be doing that. Everybody should be looking at your neighbor. Everyone should be looking at the person on the street and recognize that your problems are yours for a reason. You know, that whether you want to believe in God or anything else, you know, you've been dealt the hand you've been dealt because you can handle it. That's how I always looked at my stuff. So when I came into work, it was a break. It was a break from being sick. It was a break from, you know, medication, doctor's appointments and all that stuff. So I came to work and I was happy to be there. It was a joy. And not that it's not still a joy, but it's just a little more hard work now, in a different position, you know, being a trainer and then also being, you know, the other tasks that I do perform at this level. So it's become harder to be that person, to be positive, but then that's kind of the reason why I work in Naugatuck as well, because now I just go there and I go be a dispatcher. And I can just go in and do my hours and work with my coworkers. And I don't have to do payroll and all those other things that, you know, not that I don't like them, I do. But they're tasks in addition to my workload when you're having a bad call and then it's Friday afternoon and payroll still needs to get done, you know. So you have the balance. Reminding myself that, you know what, I'm very fortunate. During COVID, we all had jobs. And that was huge.
Yes.
For somebody who needed medical benefits, or I'm sure Craig, with, you know, a wife and children. My daughter just turned 26, so she's off my insurance, which is the big joke, because that was the one thing my mom always taught me, was make sure you have health insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people out there that are legitimately struggling, and they did struggle during COVID. So to be not positive or not joyful in the things that we do have, the people that we do have, the people that are willing to check on their partner, you know, the people that are positive in the building, whether no matter how bad the morale is or how grumpy the person they just dealt with was, you know, that's important. And being that person is important. I used to be a much more bigger person than that person. Now I'm trying to lean myself back to that. With a life experience that changed my outlook on a lot of stuff. So because of that, I'm trying to go back to the person that people used to compliment more instead of complain about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and two things you touched on really hit home. One is, you know, having been out on a major illness, not being able to work for several months, I can't tell you how much I really wanted to go back to work and how much I appreciated every minute of it when I got back.
Yes.
And sometimes we just need that kind of, like, you know, brick on the side of the head to kind of remind us how good we have it, you know, how great
right.
this job can be. And the other thing you mentioned was reminded me of how, as officers, if we sometimes took overtime and we were just assigned, say, to be the EMT on the ambulance, well, now all we have to do is get that ambulance to the call, be an EMT, get it to the hospital. We no longer have to be, you know, supervising the crew, the incident commander. And it's a nice kind of change of pace to not
nice.
Be the go-to person, you
right.
know, for 12 hours or whatever the shift is. So
you get the play.
Yeah.
It's play time.
It almost is.
It's, yeah.
It is. It's a great luxury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No longer have to make all the decisions. So that's pretty cool. Craig, this is an interesting term that you brought up. It's mental QA. So I know, you know, we all have to deal with QA in terms of calls, policy. Are we following, you know, we're doing everything, checking all the boxes. But what is mental QA?
I've never heard it. I made it up. Hmm. So QA,
impressive.
Well, QA is just is what it is. You said it. It's a let's take a look at these X amount of calls and let's see if our person taking the call or dispatching the calls are doing what our policy states. Hey, you did a good job. Hey, you did a bad job. You know, whatever. But we don't check on ourselves. You know, it's something shared, especially well in larger agencies where it's like the angel of death card. There will be, say, 12 people in the room that can take calls. One person's getting CPR calls nonstop. And no one else is getting that. No one checks on that one person that just got all of those CPR calls. No one. It's just, hey, good job. Next call. I beg to differ. Someone should absolutely be checking on that individual that takes that amount of strenuous calls. We do such a great job of quality assuring our policies and our procedures and our blacks and whites, but we're not taking care of the individuals in the seats doing these jobs. And that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I also think that, you know, if you don't check on them, and again, we don't have that high volume of calls, but, you know, somebody had checked on me when I took that suicide call that I mentioned earlier. And literally like left their position, came over and addressed me. And I had a 16-hour shift that day. So that was my first call in 16 hours, not a morning person. So it was a day shift, first thing. Yeah, poor guy woke up to that. If I didn't get checked on that day, I think I couldn't have survived the rest of my shift. Not because it was anything, you know, dramatic in what they did or they said, but just giving the acknowledgement that was hard, that sucked, and that was a really bad way to start your day. We always, you know, like, I don't know if people really want to hear this, but we make the joke, you know, start your day with a DOA. It's not funny. It kind of
dark
sucks.
Dark humor is what gets a lot of dispatchers through a lot of things.
Right. And I think part of it, too, is so that they can follow in the pattern of the officers. You know, they are a very dark humor group. And and to be part of the included clique, you had to kind of follow that pattern, especially 30 years ago. If you even wanted them to acknowledge you in a conversation, you had to step up to that level.
Well, I think it's a defense mechanism, and I think that's where all sides of the response field gets that from. And it's trying to make light of a tragedy or trying to make light of a obscene situation that's right. not normal. And sometimes the only way you can do that is through humor, to keep yourself maybe moving forward without absolutely breaking down. Because right. like you said earlier, you can't break down. You know, it has to get done. So that one person that came up and talked to you and that one person that came up and checked on you means all the world. Catherine, I don't know about you. I don't want a statue built of me.
No.
I don't want the center named after me.
Unless it's a size 2, because I'm still a girl.
I don't want those kind of – I don't want awards and ribbons and ceremonies and champagne bottles popped and everything. I want someone to acknowledge me. I want someone to acknowledge that I'm a human that just took a catastrophic event over the phone or over the radio, and I may not be okay. I want someone to acknowledge that, and I know you do, and I know that there's tons of people that I work with in my center that do. They just want to be acknowledged, and a main thing I think of the acknowledgement or lack thereof is consistency. I don't just want it to be one call. I want to understand that, Catherine, maybe you've taken multiple suicide calls or multiple hard calls, and not a pat on the back or an award or a high, you know, sometimes a hug and a high five
Absolutely.
Is all it takes to mitigate it at the start and make sure it's preventative before it just lumps up there. Like we said, it just builds and builds and builds.
Right.
And then you get
people
that
have to recognize that actually even giving those, high fives and hugs, it's good for you too. You
Absolutely.
Know, when we had that major call and I was training two people and it was I had the two people in the room, it made me feel good to tell them they did a good job.
Absolutely.
Like it wasn't just for them. It was for me because I was almost watching chaos instead of being part of it. And as a control freak dispatcher, it was very hard for me to not cut in on the call or cut in on the radio. But, you know, you kind of got to let your little birds fly every once in a while, and even on the big ones, because that might not be their only big one in their career. It made me feel good to say, when it was all done and over with, you know, you guys did a great job. You know, don't let anybody tell you otherwise. I think you did a good job. Now, I don't necessarily always count, but from what I saw at that moment, under those circumstances, being new people, that was good. I didn't always, not a lot of people agreed with me in the end. You know, people go back and they nitpick and they take things apart. Just getting getting that then I hopefully was beneficial to them. Because one of the people is my per diem person. So he works once a month and he comes in and he does his job and he does really well. But he was in training and was literally handling a 7-person radio call. It was hard. It wasn't easy.
Isn't that when it's needed though the most?
Right. Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Like right after the incident, like, hey,
right
are
after.
All your responders okay?
Yep.
Is the person that you were on the line with, is everyone still alive? Is everyone still going home? Yes.
And
great
to be
job.
After that call, we were included in the debriefing, which in my 30 years here, I've probably been in all of the calls that I've had, maybe 3 debriefings. Maybe.
In
the
30 years?
The department in itself has probably had many, but to have the dispatchers be included, I want to say 1 or 2. 3 would be generous. So to finally be, you know, the progression of us being included in that, the recognition that we were part of that call. And we had just started our peer support group right before that call. And 3 out of our 4 peer support people, myself, and 2 of the officers were present for that call. So we had to have another agency come in and do it. They did a great job. But it was important. It was important that, you know, everybody that participated was polite and respectful, and take a step back. Remember that you need to be nice, be a little bit of a light instead of a downer. It's hard. It's not always easy in this field.
No.
Well, thank you both so much for being here and being part of Responder Resilience. This is a conversation we've been wanting to have for quite a while, because dispatchers are an integral part of the whole process, and really you make the call successful. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do our jobs. So thank you for all you do, and thank you for being leaders in your own department. I know you're both doing good work out there. Is there anything else that we didn't cover you'd like to talk about?
I think Catherine just did a fantastic segue to it, was peer support and taking care of your people. If you're out there and you have an agency or you're in an agency, start a peer support system. Don't wait for one to construct and make it and do it. Through burnout, and my biggest thing moving forward and out of that was helping others. And when I went through burnout, I felt that I was alone and I was broken, and that was it for me. And to know that there are other people out there that have experienced things that I've experienced and similar things, just to know that you're part of a bigger group is huge to begin with. But to know that there's actually people out there that are not judgmental and they actually care about you and they want to see you succeed and be a better person of who you are, being part of that group to make sure that others are included as well is absolutely huge. So part of what Catherine was saying about being positive and the peer support, you have to take care of each other and you have to look after one another. It's huge. If you don't, no one will. So it has to start with you.
Very true. Very true. And no one understands it like we do. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people that aren't with a significant other that's in this field, whether it's law enforcement, firefighting, medical services, if they're not in this field, they often don't understand, from to the person that's taking the phone call to the person that's on the road. It's a very hard thing to explain. It's very upsetting. There's a side of society that you don't want to share with your other half unless your other half is in this field. And not having that, if you don't have that at home, you need it at work. So very fortunate. I mean, my other half is a police officer, and we've been together a long time, and we work very well at bouncing things off of each other in regards to, you know, this stunk or that was not good or this admin or that officer or whatever it may be. We do well with that, but I've been in previous relationships where the people are not this field, and growing up in this and not having the level of peer support that we have now and the level of inclusion as civilian dispatchers with the sworn personnel was really hard in the younger years. Very hard. So very grateful for peer support now at both my agencies. Being part of it, and then also so in Watertown I'm part of the peer support, and then in Naugatuck, I'm just a member of the department. So the peer support team does a lot for their department people. It brings a lot of things home to me that changed, rejuvenated my opinion, my behavior. And I'm grateful for that, because I could have been a real crazy old lady.
Well, thank you both for sharing your perspective on the life of a dispatcher. This has been an amazing episode. We'd like to remind everybody to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience, and to watch us on not only YouTube, but Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. page, and bbsradio.com. We're live Wednesdays, 7 p.m. Eastern. And until the next show, stay safe and be kind to yourself.